no light.
Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 64. Hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu. Remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these 9 methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5, 23-24. So this is, we also see this in other literatures, like in Manu, then it mentions that a Brahmin who is studying, hearing and chanting, then is considered to be the best situated, right? One who is hearing and chanting about the Lord, chanting the Lord's names, he is the best. So this principle of that, having studied all the scriptures, understood everything there is to know, then this is the conclusion one should come to, is following or practicing devotional service, right? These 9 angas of devotional service, that this is considered the best conclusion. Because knowledge is only to actually free us from the material state, right? To situate us properly in devotional service. This knowledge is not how one performs devotional service on the transcendental platform, right? In one's constitutional position. It means the principles are still there, but it's not actually the medium of interaction. In the material world, then we're using that, the elements that we're attracted to and attached to, those we're using in the Lord's service through this knowledge of their connection to Krishna. Right? Either through the activity itself being recognized by the Shastra, through the energies that are at work there, the experiences that are at work. In some way, we're connecting all these things to Krishna. So that aspect means we're using the knowledge there. But when you come to the platform of actual pure devotional service here, then there's no need for that kind of knowledge because you're dealing with Paramatma, Brahman and Paramatma. Right? So that gets you out of the material world. But these processes, they deal with Bhagavan. This is what gets you into the spiritual world. So having come to the conclusion that performing these activities, I will establish myself in Krishna consciousness, that's the most intelligent. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So having studied all the scriptures, then you know one's come to the proper conclusion if they're engaged in dynamic devotional service. Right? Whatever their position, but they've somehow or another connected everything to Krishna, and this is what's prominent in their consciousness. Right? Not trying to dovetail their activities, but being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and the activities are naturally then engaged. Does it make sense? Yes.
Does that mean that karma and jnana, they get us out of the material world, and bhakti actually helps us to develop love of God? Or does karma and jnana also help us to develop in love?
Because karma and jnana, does it help us develop or only bhakti? Basically speaking, is karma and jnana, they keep us in the material world. When karma and jnana are connected to Krishna, that's what gets you out of the material world. Right? Because why would we be engaged in karma and jnana? Right? Because we're distracted by it. Our conditioned nature is inclined towards it. Right, we'll be inclined towards karma or jnana, some aspect. Right, so then, by connecting karma and jnana to Krishna, that frees you from the material world. Right, that liberates you. Right, because the two are combined. The activity is done with proper knowledge.
But does it also give love of God?
It takes you forward because you're doing it to please Krishna. So, in other words, it's like this, that karma and jnana have been combined as buddhi yoga. That you're performing those activities and, you know, that liberates you from the material world, right? That you're doing it for Krishna, that's bhakti, that gets you into the spiritual world. Right? Because there's the activity, then there's the mentality behind it. So the karma and jnana, because you're doing it to please Krishna, that doing it to please Krishna, that's what gets you into the spiritual world, but the activities themselves get you out of the material world. Does that make sense? Like that. So they go on simultaneously, because to get into the spiritual world means you have to get out of the material world. But it's just the mechanics of what's doing it. So just bhakti itself, if you're attracted, you'll get into the spiritual world. Getting out of the material world, you won't even notice. It's not important to you, because the material world is not important. Therefore, if you just perform directly the devotional activities, you're unaware of the material world, because it's not important to you. Does that make sense?
But isn't there also a means to develop our attachment and love for Krishna? Can that karma and jnana also develop?
How would the karma and jnana develop attachment for Krishna?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Because I said this is only but it's 9-fold devotional
growth. But, here, okay. There's an action and there's the mood behind it, right? So that you're doing something to please Krishna, isn't that bhakti?
Yeah.
Right. So it may not be Shravanam Kirtanam, but there may be the element of Vishnu Smaranam. You're thinking of Krishna, so therefore you're doing it. Or in Padasevanam, you're dealing with the paraphernalia, the devotees and everything like that. So you're seeing it in that. Or you see here Dasyam, right? It means you're engaged in the process of Vaidhi Bhakti in the Lord's service. So you're connecting those things. The things that you're connecting, it's just like this. You take a potato and engage it in the Lord's service. But is the potato spiritual? No, but it becomes spiritualized. Right? After Krishna eats it, then it becomes prasad. But before that, you're engaging that potato. It's a potato. So it's not the potato that's bringing you closer to Krishna. It's that you're using the potato for Krishna that gets you closer to Krishna. You understand? Yet sometimes, see, some things, the direct activities, then means there's elements that the external and the internal are exactly the same. But the point is if the external is different from the internal, it becomes spiritualized by that internal. You know what I'm saying? So you're using the potato, is that activity of cooking is being spiritualized. Right? So you're getting the credit for devotional service, but you're still using the material energy. Does that make sense? You're sewing for Krishna, you're still using a sewing machine, it's still material energy. The action is karma, but you're doing it for Krishna. Therefore, you get the benefit of devotional service. It's not that the sowing itself is what's taking you back to Godhead. It's that you're using the sowing for Krishna that takes you back to Godhead.
That's why there's no difference between using things here or in the spiritual world.
There's no difference between using things here or in the spiritual world. And it also, that's why it doesn't matter what situation you're in. If you're using things in an appropriate way for Krishna's service, it doesn't matter what your situation is. Right? So that's why for us, it doesn't matter what varna or ashram you're working with. Right? Any of it is a medium for pleasing Krishna and going back to Godhead. Now you're just distinguishing between the two. Because what's the difference between always remember Krishna and never forget him? If you're remembering, you're not forgetting, but it's two different angles. They're one instruction, but it's two different angles. Because you can only remember if you're not forgetting. So those things that make you forget, you remove those, then your endeavor to remember will be fruitful. Right? But if you're trying to remember Krishna at the same time, those things, you're remembering those things that distract you from Krishna, it won't be stable, it won't be steady.
So you engage in those things that cause you to forget, you want to remember.
Yes, those things that make you forget, that's what you're dovetailing Krishna's service. At the same time as you're also engaged in the direct activities. Always remembering Krishna through hearing, chanting, and remembering, right? So, I mean, those, that's your direct. Right? At the same time, you're using these other things to bring what you makes you forget Krishna around to Krishna. And that much of the time is the indirect. Right? Or it may be direct through the rules and regulations, but you don't necessarily connect it. But it's generally indirect, right? Worshipping the deity is direct. Taking a bath to worship the deity is indirect. Because taking a bath doesn't take you back to Godhead. Right? Worshipping the deity does. But you are worshipping the deity, you're taking a bath so you can worship the deity, so it gets connected. So that you're taking a bath to worship Krishna, then that's called devotional service. You get the same benefit. But that you're taking a bath, that's not devotional service. You understand? But you're taking a bath for Krishna, that's devotional service. Does that make sense? So this making that distinction between the activity and what is actually devotional about it. Right? Chanting the holy name, that's directly Krishna. So that is devotional service, whether you're aware of it or not. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're living in the Dham. That is devotional service, whether you're, you know, always aware of it or not. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the more you're aware, the more direct it's happening. Right? Or the more you're engaging indirect things in Krishna's service. You're bringing, the indirect is still giving you the direct result. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. No? Yeah? Okay. Just making sure. Okay. Then Chaitanya Charitamrita says the same in Madhya Lila 22:118. Those knowledgeable of bhakti do not say that the acts of karma are at any time an anga or an activity of bhakti, unless an action loses its fruit of intention and attains the form and name of causeless devotion. It does not become bhakti. Before karma transforms its very nature, it undergoes three stages: nishkama karma, karma without material desire, karmarpana, offering the results to Krishna, and karma yoga. When a person passes these three stages, the very form of karma, karma swarup, changes and becomes devotional service. Thus Srimad Bhagavatam says, quote, as long as one is not satiated by food of activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtan, and Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29. When a person becomes indifferent to karma, karma simply becomes gyan. When real faith in topics of Krishna arises, karma changes into bhakti. Right. Okay, so these fine points on this is that acts of karma never are bhakti, right? Because karma means you're doing it for fruit of result. An action is being done for fruit of result, right? Means in the generic sense, karma simply means action, right? So Mother Jashoda is cooking for Krishna. You could say that's an activity. But it's not how, when we say karma, we mean that it's an action that will get a result that we're interested in. So in other words, it's fruitive work. So the mentality is fruitive, so therefore the result of it, we call it fruitive. Otherwise, the same activity done simply to please Krishna is called bhakti. It's not called karma. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, not being interested. When a person is indifferent to karma, to jnana, it becomes jnana. It's not that because now I'm indifferent to the material world, therefore it's devotion. No, that becomes jnana. Now that jnana has to be connected to Krishna. Right? Bhakti means that it's out of affection for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what we're endeavoring for, is to do things, means understand Krishna is a person, we're a person, we can have a relationship. Right? It's not that, oh, we're so far, we can never have... No, anybody has a relationship. God's there, he's sitting in your heart right now. We can have that relationship. But, you know, in the beginning, it's just, we know, it's based on knowledge. Right? And then that knowledge gives rise to the spontaneous devotional service. Does this make any sense? Right? It's just a matter of the fine point between the externals and the actual devotional mood. Because actually, the worry is not that whether you're using material energy, you know, engaging that Krishna service, or using spiritual energy and connecting to Krishna service. Mm-hmm. The point is that you're connected to Krishna through devotional service. Does that make sense? That way, then, it doesn't really matter if you're in the material or spiritual world. But since we're in the material world, we think the material world is something important, separate from Krishna. Therefore, we make these distinctions. Otherwise, one is engaging some material thing in Krishna's service, and that's very nice, but after a while you think just that engagement, that thing, is Krishna's service. Right? Devotee is managing for Krishna. He has a managing tendency. He's managing for Krishna. Okay? So now, if you can't make this distinction, then after a while, as he wants to do, you know, he's heard about these self-help books, he's heard about things of how you could become a good manager, you've got all these books that tell you how to manage nicely. So he starts studying those books, you know, to manage nicely, but basically what happens is he gets more into the expertise of management. And then you can forget that you're actually doing that for Krishna. So what's important is not the expertise of management. The important thing is doing it for Krishna. Now, if you can be more expert at it, that means you get a nicer result for Krishna, because who's the result for? But forget about that, the results for Krishna. You just think, if the management is better, that's devotion. No, it's the mood of doing that for Krishna that is devotion. Does that make sense? It's a fine point. So one could get distracted. And then devotees don't necessarily appreciate your new management skills because you haven't brought them into the flavor of Krishna's environment, you know, of that mood for Krishna. So then others start to complain. And because it is a more expert application of your conditioned nature, in other words, it's better you're a manager and it's better management, therefore you go looking at other places where you can apply this better management. And it's not necessarily in the temple. You know what I'm saying? It's outside the temple.
Yes. First of all, if you do the activity for Krishna, so then with the devotion, so Krishna gives the intelligence, so he gives the expertise.
Yeah.
If
yes.
We look for it ourselves. We don't know the doer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Means it'll come, Krishna can give the intelligence. Or if you hear from somebody, like, because one quarter of our knowledge comes from others' experience. So if you can somehow or another pick up from someone else's experience and engage it, then it's nice. But if not, then the point is you also get knowledge through one's own experience, one's own practice. Right? So that way it'll come up. You understand why we're making this distinction? Because many times you see a devotee becomes very expert at something, and with time they're being very expert about this outside the movement. Not inside the movement. You know, because they're engaging their conditioned nature, but the line is very fine between it, because it's simply the mood of it, not the expertise of it. Does that make sense? If you have good ability, then you should be trying to do it very nicely for Krishna. To not do that would mean you're being lazy. Does that make sense? But it makes a distinction. These are practical points. Because especially here, is if you're dealing in the realm of, you know, family life, community life, then very much you have to be able to understand these fine points. Otherwise, how is it? Means it's just like Prabhupada said, just taking care of your kid, and that's all you do, nothing else. You can't say that that's devotional service, that that's enough. You know, you still have to chant your rounds, you still have to be somehow or another connected with, you know, the devotional processes. That may be, you know, a major part of your occupation, but it doesn't replace your sadhana. Does this make sense? But otherwise, it may distract like that. Does that make sense or no?
Yeah.
So that's why it's being brought out, these things, very fine. Okay. So basically, if an action loses its fruit of intention, right, and then its whole purpose is to be done for Krishna, right? That's actually your purpose. It's not that it loses the fruitive and not develops the devotional intention. Right? Because if it loses the fruitive, it becomes gyan. It transforms from karma to gyan, but it doesn't transform into bhakti. So it loses its fruitive intention, right? And its whole purpose is to be used to please Krishna as an expression of that devotion towards Krishna. Then it becomes bhakti. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, could it be explained as an example? What is the proper mood of the manager to perform the duty? What is the proper mood?
Proper mood. Proper. In basic, then is things of the world. If you want to do of anything of any developed, you know, state, any kind of sophistication, then there must be organization. So the whole idea is that the organization is there so that the activities can be done in a, you know, steady way. Because otherwise, one day, you know, you're able to make a nice offering to the deity, and the next day you can't because no one brought any boga, or there's no gas, or there's, you know, no one's there to cook, everyone's doing something else. So the organization is actually to that all the activities of devotional service are going on steadily. Right? So because one wants to do so many nice services for Krishna, then one can't do everything oneself. So there must be other people engaged, so that takes organization. You know, training and organization. That's why those go together. You mean if education is going on like that and organization is going on, then everything else can happen nicely. Right? Then your artha, kama, they all come very nicely. Everything else will come. All other activities will be able to be taken care of. If things are well organized and people are well trained, everything else will come. Like that. Is that? Okay. So these three stages. Then we have naish karma, karma without material desire, karmarpana, offering the results to Krishna, and karma yoga. Okay. So here he's putting in this way, this nishkama means that you don't have any desire. So we're looking at that the nishkam karma yoga is better. It means it has no desire. But the point is it should be connected to Krishna. It should be karmarpana, is that the results are for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So here we've taken it and reversed it. Normally we've taken it, you have karma yoga, then karmarpana, and then nishkam karma. Right, that's how we take it, because you're going from you're just dealing in karma, somehow or another connected, you know, to Krishna. Then it's the results of that are for Krishna. you know, to Nishkam, where you don't have any desire for it and it's already for Krishna. But the point is that already for Krishna is the karma yoga aspect. You understand? So in other words, one is you're looking at the form of it, the other you're looking at the mentality of it. Because nishkarma simply means I don't need the result. Right? See, you're dealing in an environment where, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is dealing in an environment where there are people who follow this nishkarmya, but it's not in connection to devotional service. The impersonalists, the mayavadis, they perform their activities without desire for material result. Right? So that's nice. I'm doing this, I don't want the result. You understand? This is what's being meant here. Like that. But you're not talking about, so it's not material, so it's better. Right? I'm not doing it because I don't want the result. You know, the result's for Krishna. But the emphasis is on I don't want the result. The next stage is the result's for Krishna. Right? And the next stage is just this work is Krishna's work. Does that make sense? Right. First, I'm doing the work because that's what I'm supposed to do. I don't want any result. You know? The next is that this work is being, you know, we're doing this work and then this result is for Krishna. The next is we're doing this for Krishna. You know, so therefore result everything, the work, everything's done for Him. Does this make sense? Or? Very subtle, putting it in this way. Because we're looking at it, you know, the way things work, go. That's why your lowest is your highest in the spiritual. So it depends on the form. So therefore we're going from the lowest to the highest, but if we change the mentality, it actually switches. You know what I'm saying? The residents of Vrindavan are not doing naishkarmya. The residents of Vrindavan are doing activities that are completely connected to Krishna. You understand? So in the material world, people are doing engaged in the karma aspect because... Oh, I thought you were giving me a CD or something. I was thinking, wow, what's the CD for? I only saw this, and I said, wow, that's interesting. It's a new kind of recorder. It writes directly onto the CD or something. Could be, you know. Does this make some sense? So we're looking at it from both ways, like we were discussing in the morning. Is that depending on the perspective, then you put things in order. Right? Just like Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan, depending on what you're emphasizing, what aspect, it changes. You emphasize the knowledge aspect in Abhideya, then it becomes Sambandha Gyan. You know what I'm saying? You emphasize the experience of it, it becomes Prayojana. Right? You know, and if you're explaining, it means like in there is that the knowledge to perform the activity, but even the knowledge that this work gets this result, that still becomes Sambandha. Right? And maybe the Prayojana aspect is Sambandha, but it's still Sambandha. Right? By doing this, you'll get that result, because you're not doing it, you're only discussing it. Right? Is that too much smoke? Huh? A bit. Let it go up more. Does that make sense? Right. So, in other words, this element that it flips, it can be seen in one way or the other way. Right? In other words, the form of naishkarmya is seen as higher because it's getting you closer to liberation. But the mood of doing this to please Krishna is what gets you into the spiritual world, so technically that's higher than the other. So most people are performing an activity because they want the result. And they're taking their own pleasure in doing it. That's why it's considered the lowest. Right? Then you're doing it more as that, okay, now this result is for Krishna. right? Then more than that is that it's I'm only doing this work, you know, not for material purposes, right? For Krishna. So we'll look at it that way, but what actually, what makes it move in that direction and stay that way, that we would call that in the devotional path, is because the mentality has gotten better. But then when the mentality gets better, that naishkarmya, you're not doing it, you're only doing it to please Krishna, then is very well expertly performed karma yoga. Because the jnana aspect has left it. You know, it's not because if I do like this without the desire for the result, then that will free me from the reactions like that. That's not, it's not technical. Does that make sense? So it's the go looking like this and then it switches. You know what I'm saying? And when it's on this side of the viraja, then you put it together and you put karma at the top. Right? But when it actually becomes devotional, the quality of it increases, that devotional is the main, then it switches. Then the devotional with the jnana is less than the devotional where you're doing, please, you know, for Krishna too, it's just Krishna's work you're just doing. You know what I'm saying? So you're dealing with the forms, though generally we combine them and put them together in one way. So we're used to hearing, like from Vishwanath, from Nectar Devotion, about how you perform the activity, then it's sakam, then it goes to nishkam, right? But, so that is going from, you're looking at the devotional part of it. The devotional mentality is improving. Therefore, those forms are increasing. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out is, you can have naishkarmya that's not necessarily, the drive is not devotional. Right? In other words, someone situated in karma, then for them to, through knowledge, give up the desire for those results, that's a step forward. But for someone who's inclined to jnana, then naishkarmya is easy for them. But to do an activity for someone else's pleasure, that's harder. Because I don't work for myself, I don't work for anyone else either. Yes?
So in nishkam karma that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about, who is it, where is it being offered? What is the point of it?
Means the point, what he's making here, we can see from the last points. It says, what did it mean? Yeah, when a person becomes indifferent to karma, karma simply becomes jnana. In other words, nishkam karma can be done not for anybody. It's just, I am doing this because I'm supposed to do this without any desire for the result. That means I'll get no karma from it. So, therefore, it gets me out of the material world, but in no way, shape, or form will get me into the spiritual world. Therefore, it's less. So, therefore, when it's touched by, the results are for Krishna. So, I'm still doing the nishkam. I'm doing it without any desires for results. But the element is that idea of that I'm doing this without any karmic reaction. Then the result of that activity, I'm giving to Krishna. In other words, the karma is in the first stage means all three you're performing an action, and that's giving you a result. So in the first one, what he's describing here, this nishkam, that he is doing this activity without wanting that result. So the result's even being ignored. Activity's being performed. Then the next one is he's performing the activity without the desire for the result. Result is coming, he's giving that to Krishna. Right? But still, the emphasis is on doing the activity without desiring the result. Right? Then the third stage, the karma yoga, he mentions here, then the karma yoga means he is just doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So that's looking at it in this way, because he's trying to split off this jnana aspect. Because otherwise, we do the thing, we become indifferent, but it just becomes jnana. He's trying to be able to take it that we can distinguish between karma and jnana, that they're engaged in Krishna's service or not. Right? In other words, there's fine points. As many times we may feel it's devotional service because I have no attachment, but it may not be devotional. Like I'm in the kitchen, I'm cooking, I don't want to eat any of the things there, but I may not be thinking of Krishna. So the new devotee who's, you know, smelling it, wow, that smells like, you know, don't be attached, Prabhu, and all that kind of thing. You're on a superior position as far as liberation goes. But it's not necessarily that it's devotional. If you step back from it overall, you're in the kitchen for Krishna. But at the moment, your consciousness is more that I'm detached from the material world. Do we see these points? Is this too fine or something? Or is too not being explained well? Or you understand? Because the ideas were trying to open the door to these subtle distinctions. And then with time, they'll become normal ways of thinking that you can discern very nicely in something, right? Because if you want to become expert at anything, you have to be able to discern the elements of it, right? In cooking, you have to discern the tastes, right? You have to be able to tell the difference between, you know, if it's spiced with cumin seeds or if it's spiced with fenugreek. You have to be able to tell the difference. Otherwise, how you'll learn to cook? Does that make sense? So slowly, slowly, then you make the field of activities is being given so that one can tell the difference. Because if you can tell the difference in this, how things switch on that mirror, right? Means when there's desire, material desire, means the spiritual world is reflected on the water of material rasa, right? The desire for material rasa, that water is what the spiritual world is reflecting on, that you get this upside down reflection. So as soon as you remove material desire, you're not dealing with the reflection anymore. So things reverse and they're in their natural position. Does that make sense? So the ability to be able to understand that flip, because otherwise sometimes it's not understood. One will be very expert in managing, doing one's sadhana, doing one's activities, and one thinks I'm very advanced. In one sense, you are. You're stable. You would say that's nishtha on one platform. But on another platform, it's actually the jnana aspects become so strong, you're not attached to anything, but you're not attached to anybody else either. Right? He's very fixed, focused, and all that, but he's not nice to be with. He doesn't interact with people. But he also, because he doesn't interact with Krishna either. But if you ask him why he's doing that, he's doing it for Krishna. Therefore, it's still considered within the devotional realm. But the point is how quickly will he advance? Because there isn't that focus and that drive on Krishna. Therefore, ruchi doesn't come. He just stays at that platform of nishtha. And that nishtha is like liberation. It's between where you're performing things for material taste and you're performing things for spiritual taste. Right? Anartha means material taste. Ruchi means spiritual taste. So nishtha is in between. Right, so the platform is that you're neutral from material activities. So it's naishkarmya. But if you wanted to progress, then it has to be that result in everything that before, like how do you get yourself to that point is you focus on results not for me. Right? So it's just I'm doing the activity, do it right, you put on the blinders so that you don't get distracted. But once you've become steady at that, now you can deal with the result and now do it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah. So it's a matter of the thing is reversing. So we have to be able to look at it from both and understand what's become the prominent, therefore it's all right. Because an action is not good because it's not connected to Krishna. Otherwise, the Pandavas, how much they're involved in material activities. But do we say they're involved in material activities? No. Because they're doing everything for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
In Bhagavad Gita about first you just focus on me, Krishna's plan, then if you cannot do this, then you follow someone.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just wondering, this the last stage, Karma Yoga, is it the same, like, work for me, what Krishna says, or follow Sadhana Bhakti?
See, is in here what we're talking means she is like, we're used to hearing this in the reverse order. Right, is that in the reverse order, we're used to it that you're performing an action That's called sakam, right? So here then, karma yoga would be sakam, right? Karmarpana would be where that sakam is, you're giving the result for Krishna, you know? Like that. And then nishkam would be where the action and the result are for Krishna. Right? But because he's bringing out this element of that karma and jnana are not angas of bhakti, right? Because otherwise some people will say that dasyam means you're engaging karma and jnana. Right? So varnashram and everything like that. So people will make the mistake that the karma and jnana, the varnashram, you know, the knowledge, that itself is bhakti. But it's not. It's the engagement of it that is bhakti. You know, just like the brick is not bhakti, but that you use it to build the temple, that use of it, that's bhakti. But the brick itself is not. So you're trying to distinguish between karma and jnana and bhakti. So karma and jnana on its own, karma and jnana engaged in the Lord's service. So to that degree that it's engaged in the Lord's service, when it's complete, you just call it bhakti. You don't call it karma and jnana anymore. Because technically, it's the other way around. Complete absorption in Krishna, that's bhakti. And as the fruit of mentality or that aspect of liberation comes up in the mind, then it's transforms from bhakti, you know, down into jnana, karma and jnana. You know what I'm saying? Because the activities that go on in this world technically are from the spiritual world. Right? I mean, the concept of family life, where does that come from? We'll say it's material. No, it's actually spiritual. Spiritual is the origin. Material is the reflection. So if this is a reflection, that means what you see here has its origin there. Right? There's families, there's communities, there's, you know, the whole, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, all those, that's all there. But it's in its perfect state because it's connected to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Then it's reflected here. All that you're doing in the reflection is removing Krishna from it. In our perception, Krishna is still there. But in our perception, he's not there. We call that material. So activity done on that level of not thinking of Krishna, you know, for the result, for yourself, that's called karma. Right? And having the knowledge of the workings in the material world so that you won't be implicated in that karma because of the pain of it. And that not being implicated, you call that happiness. Right? In other words, one is implicated and getting the result of that, that's called happiness. The other is not becoming implicated. That's called happiness. But in either one of them, where is Krishna? He's not there. So when you add Krishna to that degree that Krishna is added, that the activity and its result are being done for Krishna, the knowledge that you have is completely absorbed in how to better do the service for Krishna, that becomes, that then transforms into bhakti. Is it, are we getting anywhere? Right? Yes.
I think what's confusing is the terminology, because there seems to be two concepts of nishkam. And you're explaining it well, that one means that one is just you don't have the desire for it, and one means that you don't have desire for it because you have the desire for Krishna.
Yes.
So is it that nishkam karma yoga? Is that you're actually doing it for Krishna, the yoga? The
means that's how we'll do it.
But then...
Because yoga can have many... See, as all these terms have their term, their definition on the platform of karma, jnana, and bhakti. You know what I'm saying? So they have it all on all those levels. Just like when we say, deathlessness. What does that mean? Right? For the karmi, it means going to the heavenly planets. They're amara. For the jnani, it means obtaining Brahman. For the devotee, it means attaining to, you know, the spiritual world. Like that. Or we say, eternal bliss. What does that mean? Right? For the karmi, it means going to the heavenly planets and being there for thousands and thousands of years. Right? For the impersonalist, it means going to the Brahman. But for us, it means serving, you know, Krishna in his Bhagavan form, in his pastimes. So all these things have all their definitions, just like Atma. What does it mean? So it means the body, it means the mind, it means the intelligence, it means the soul. So that means it covers everything. Because the body means the ego, right? So your five gross elephants and false... Five gross elephants, yes. Five, they are very gross, the elephants, but here's the five gross elements. And ahankara, that those six, that comprises one concept, right? The bodily concept, right? Then you have the senses, those five working senses, the five knowledge-inquiring senses, right? The sense objects, and the tanmatras, right? Means the sense of touch, sense of smell, sense... Those, what do you got there? You got there 15. Then that, you know, combined, either that is within the realm of the mind, or that you can say is intelligence, because the intelligence is the one who actually operates them. You know, either one of them. That's why it said body, mind, and words. You know, what happened to the knowledge? No, because words are the symptom of intelligence, because the senses are connected to the intelligence. Right? So that covers everything, right? In the material sphere. Then we have the soul, the platform of the soul. So that means this Atma can cover everything that there is, both spiritual and material. So that's why then Krishna is the Atma of the universe, means he's Atma of everything, right? So that's why it's important to understand what is the meaning of these things, so that when you deal with them, you understand the context, right? Then you can appreciate how it's being applied in the situation. So just like here, then we don't get stuck on terminology, because we know that this word has three, or depending on how it is, three or four different applications. And it's just a matter of, you know, lower, middle, and higher. Right? Means 2 + 2 = 4 in arithmetic. It's still the same in algebra. It's still the same in geometry, trigonometry. It's the same. It's just how it's used. That's all.
So it's just that nishkam means without desire, but that doesn't imply that it's desire to Krishna. It
yes.
means that you don't have...
No. We've learned it from the devotional angle, based on the verses from Nectar of Devotion that Vishwanath pulls, and then writes a book on that. Then that's how we define it, and that's the best way to define it, because the two are combined. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out is that there are actually two different elements that you're combining. And because of this, then, because otherwise, how do you say that the gopis are the highest? Because then technically, according to what we're saying, this naishkarmya, they're not doing that, because that's not how they're thinking. But it is the highest form of naishkarmya. Right? Because they're only doing activities to please Krishna. So they're working on the Sarva Dharma Parityaja. I am just trying to please Krishna. So my activities are to please Krishna. So in that way then, they're different from Naishkarmya. Because Naishkarmya means you're performing an activity that could have a fruitive result, but you're not acting for that result. Right? You've already either given it to Krishna, which is better, or you will give it to Krishna. Right? So they're working on the platform, it's already Krishna's there, everything's already Krishna's. So there's no question of making these distinctions. Because the jnana aspect has been dropped from karma, from naishkarmya. When you drop it, all you have left is karma. So the karma yoga means all their activities have been connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we're trying to get these fine, just like when we started, what was it, you know, eons ago, with the definitions, that list of definitions, right? Remember that? It's back in the... There's a fog there. I know it looks like the cow dung smoke, but... And then we went through those terminologies of all the different ways that you can break down the terminology used for Sambandhavideya Prayojana, right? The natives are restless. It teaches us we're going over time, okay? Right? In other words, I and mine, envy and attachment, they're exactly the same thing, but they're slightly different perspective. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that all these different things you're able to, when it's dealing in this perspective, you see it that way. When you're dealing with something else, you're able to see it that way. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're trying to develop is the ability that it's only a few concepts that are there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the Dasamul. The Dasamul still falls within Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Right? So these few concepts, we can look at them. So if these concepts are universal and apply to everything, that means technically applying to everything means there's going to be different perspectives. Because we're going to say, Ayurveda is totally different than let's say, Stapanaveda or Gandharva Veda or Jyotish, but technically they're not. The form of it looks different, but it's actually not. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're trying to deal with. Does that make sense? So that's why memorization is not as important. Because memorization, you have a good memory, you can do it. And if that was the whole point, then it wouldn't be this crowd. Right? Memorization happens, between 8 to 10. After that, you kind of, because they learn it, they remember it. We can stick it in there and then after 2 weeks forget it. Right? So it's by our constant use of it that it actually becomes, part of our way of thinking. So we're trying to get the technique by which we can always use it. Then these primary or principal terms become always usable. Right? Because there's always going to be a changing of the situation of that. So depending upon that, you apply it slightly differently. You know what I'm saying? You hit a nail, hammer hits things, right? And makes them go in a particular direction. You hit the nail with the head of it. But you see when they're using it, when they want it, like in carpentry, they want to hit something really hard, they hit it with the head. But when they want to do it light, they turn the head sideways, and with the side of the head, they hit the chisel. You know what I'm saying? And when you want to take the nail out, you turn it around backwards. But it's still the same hammer. It still works in the same principles. But it puts the nail in, it takes the nail out. Does that make sense? So you're dealing with opposites. That's why Chinta Beda Veda Tattva. To be able to accommodate that all these seemingly contradictory things work very nicely together. But unless we can recognize that, we won't deal with that. Because two devotees are discussing philosophy, and it seems like they're talking opposite. No, there's a common principle. You see that common principle, you can solve their problem. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki,
Jai
Nitai Govara Premanandi.
This kind of approach can be used towards people who are on the platform Gyan and those who are on the platform Karma, the more approach which Vaishnava is more.
No, it's not necessarily that, it's just a matter of what you're trying to do. It's just a matter of, I'm saying, just saying.